How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Fire rates.
Time is now to turn the math around.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Pollock and Thurston. I am John Pollock from Post Wrestling, joined as always by WrestleNomics' own Brandon Thurston. Hello. As we continue to navigate the intriguing world of politics, how it has seeped its way into these various industries that we tend to cover. How are you today, Brandon?
I'm good. I'm an accidental political reporter now, and we have news of a decision coming from the executive branch of the U.S. government that is sure to troll all indie wrestlers turned school teachers for it might not be 4 years, but for some time.
For some time, yes. For all the complaints, Robert Kennedy Jr., Matt Gaetz, Dr. Oz. The latest cabinet position looks to be that of Linda McMahon to head the education department, as announced by Donald Trump on Tuesday. Linda McMahon, as we spoke about last week, appeared to be the front runner to be the commerce secretary, but then Trump ended up selecting...
Plans changed.
They do apparently change, and instead, the co-chair of the transition team, Howard Lutnick, co-chair with Linda McMahon, looks to be the front runner to take that post. And I don't know if this is a consolation prize. Here, you take education of the U.S. And of all the cabinet picks, I mean, not to say this one is without ridicule and plenty of people realizing there is a Ring Boy lawsuit attached to Linda McMahon. Generally, this is like one of the more sane picks of some of the others that have been tabbed here. But nonetheless, plenty of people learning about Linda McMahon, learning about her involvement with WWE. And I know this is always a favorite of Brandon and mine, is that when Linda McMahon is thrust onto the front page of newspapers and political commentary, can the wrestling jokes, are they still alive and well in 2024? I just wanted to get the straight news straight from the source, and hopefully NPR could handle this in a unbiased way and leave pro wrestling at the side.
What is clear is that she is a very successful, no-nonsense businesswoman who has a ton of experience dealing with some pretty big personalities.
Yeah, that she does, which might come in handy if she's confirmed. So then let's talk about Trump's big promise to close the education department. How is she going to do that?
Yeah, look, a bipartisan group of experts have told me over the past week, closing the department is one wrestling match that McMahon probably cannot win.
Bipartisan experts, they all use that exact language, a wrestling match that she cannot win. But nonetheless, Donald Trump laying a smackdown on education. There you go for headline writers out there. But yes, Linda McMahon thrust here into a major position in the Trump cabinet, and this will follow her previous role as head of the Small Business Administration during the first Trump presidency, and then resigning from that post to launch the America First Policy Institute, where she has raised millions and millions of dollars for the Trump reelection campaign, and herself donating a significant amount into the eight figures for this campaign.
Yeah, and Howard Lutnick and her have been co-chairing the transition team. Howard Lutnick is another major donor. She's given $10 million alone to the Make America Great campaign. And another, this number is now too low, this $814,000 that she gave to the Trump 47 Inc. campaign. She gave more after I made this report, or at least there was more that was disclosed with the periodic FEC disclosures. So she's given a lot of money. I compared it to the last presidential election where she also gave tens of millions of dollars to Trump and Republican causes. She gave a little bit more in 2020. But she still gave tens of millions of dollars in this election, in the 2016 election, 2020, and now in 2024. And of course, in 2007, WWE, I guess, ultimately gave donated millions of dollars to the Trump Foundation, the now defunct group, the Trump Foundation, in exchange for Trump's performances in 2007 at WrestleMania and 2009 on Raw when he bought Monday Night Raw. So she's been obviously involved in all sorts of Trump-affiliated and Republican-affiliated political activities since her two unsuccessful U.S. Senate campaigns, and it looks like she will be pending U.S. Senate approval. The Senate does have to approve of this, as they did of her nomination and selection of being the leader of the Small Business Administration. They will have to approve of her being the Secretary of Education. My understanding is that even if she's involved in shutting down the Department of Education, which would be a federal government entity, most of the financial support for public education comes from outside of the federal government, something like 10%, maybe less than 10% of all education funding is actually from the federal government. But it could happen. And it's only a department that's been around since 1979.
Yeah. And it did get brought up shortly after this announcement. This goes back to 2010. This was her first run at the Senate, and a controversy involving what exactly her qualifications were within education.
What did she major in?
Well, we go back to 2010, the New York Post, the McMahon chroniclers of record, and it reads, last year, after pro wrestling matriarch Linda McMahon was nominated to Connecticut's State Board of Education, she claimed as proof of qualification her degree in education. Her degree, it was soon revealed, was in French. No matter, she was approved. And this was the focus at the time. I mean, if this is their biggest controversy among these cabinet appointees, I think Linda McMahon will pass with flying colors. But yes, this everything in your past will come back to be remembered by people many years later. Also, this was, I would say, like the first major focus on the Ring Boys scandal, with the Washington Post doing a pretty lengthy story focusing more so on the Ring Boy lawsuit in the wake of this announcement regarding Linda McMahon. And we did get a response from McMahon's attorney, another name from the past, in Laura Brevetti, more on her later, basically stating that the allegations laid out in the Ring Boy lawsuit were baseless and that, quote, the lawsuit, based upon 30-plus-year-old allegations, is filled with scurrilous lies, exaggerations, and misrepresentations, without going into any specifics. Of course, Laura Brevetti represented Vince McMahon alongside Jerry McDivitt in the 1994 steroid distribution trial and served as a senior vice president and general counsel for WWE from 2013 until 2015.
And she was, you just said that, I was going to say. She also in this Washington Post article, I've got a few notes from it here. She said she would put her financial interests in a blind trust and resign from all outside positions and board memberships if she serves in the next administration. We don't know what stocks she may be holding, other than obviously she holds a significant amount of WWE stock, although not nearly as much as Vince does. They did note in this Washington Post article all the donations that Linda herself has made, that they made to the Trump Foundation in 2007 and 2009. And those are also, by the way, those were part of the, besides the NDA payments that Vince made to numerous women who were accusing him of sexual misconduct, they also had to disclose and correct their financial statements, WWE did, because they determined as they were doing an audit of these payments that Vince may have made in the past that would have been maybe he considered them at the time personal payments, but they were actually should have been gone to the company. So there was a Trump angle to all of this, all of the financial as well as sexual misconduct scandal that emerged in 2022. I digress. And then we also had a comment from Ann Callis here, which was, I guess, well, let's say this first in response to this part of the Washington Post article that says Trump campaigned on exercising more control over the Justice Department, claiming broad executive powers that collide with longstanding norms, shielding criminal investigations from political influence, and could try to intervene in the federal probe in Devinsk Man. That's the investigation that the Southern District of New York is reportedly doing on Vincent McMahon related to allegations of sexual misconduct, sex trafficking, sexual assault. A spokesperson for the transition, Brian Hughes, declined to comment on the case. So there they are raising in the Washington Post the notion that Donald Trump's friendship with Vince McMahon, his relationship with Vince McMahon, his connection, to, strong connection clearly to Linda, that could be a factor in what is a federal criminal investigation that has put the civil lawsuit that Janelle Grant filed on hold through about 22 days from now, December 11th. So that's about as much as we can say about that, I guess. We do have the comment from Ann Callis in this article too, where she says, quote, "We have no control over what happens with any criminal investigation, but we have an unwavering will to see that Janelle Grant gets justice."
Yeah, and I guess for many people, the takeaway in this article, I mean, maybe the worst kept secret in professional wrestling, that the two are separated.
That's the headline, of course.
Yeah, that's the one, the headline everyone has run with. I mean, okay, yes, confirmed. Yes, with, as Vince McMahon referred to her some 2.5 years ago, my wife at the time.
My wife, yes. Yes, that was in the Pat McAfee interview in March.
That was, yes, our... maybe our last long form interview with Vince McMahon ever. There you go. That is the Linda McMahon story, that she will obviously have a very prominent position. And there's not to say that there will be a focus on the Ring Boy lawsuit as a result of this and whatever sort of extension there could be to a Vince McMahon federal investigation, which still has several more weeks until the stay gets lifted on December the 11th. That being the date that has been out there for the past five and a half months that they have been working towards under this federal investigation into Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
We're going to shift focus and talk a little bit about Netflix. This past Friday, they staged the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight from AT&T Stadium. And, you know, coming out of this, in the absence of, you know, Nielsen or any third-party data, we're kind of left for Netflix to, you know, put out all of their information. And that is kind of the numbers of record coming out of this. They are certainly very impressive, but I think it is important to note that these are from Netflix and Jake Paul's most valuable promotions. But, we had a live gate figure. Let's start with the gate before we get to the streaming figures, of over $18.1 million and an attendance of 72,300 at AT&T Stadium. And what did you think about hearing that number, Brandon? 72,300, and you having watched this, I mean, this looked like a pretty much a full AT&T Stadium. Where would you have fit the extra 30,000 people had this fight been able to achieve the 101,000 mark?
Well, the turnstile count for WrestleMania 32 was 81,000 some odd. So I don't know. I think that's a realistic number, and that's probably, you know, there's probably comps in there, and that's probably not including the tickets that weren't redeemed. That seems about right to me. But it seems pretty full, and it's a football stadium. The 60 million households, now that's globally.
Global.
And that's first party data. So that's it. Like, if I told you how many views this podcast is getting right now, and I can tell you it's the multiple hundreds. We have so many hundreds of people watching us right now. So I mean, you take that for what it's worth, and that's a global number. And I saw people, you know, kind of comparing this to U.S. television viewership numbers, say this is the most viewed telecast, except for things like the world, you know, more than the World Series, everything except for the Super Bowl and the Olympics. But this is a global number, and if you compare a U.S. number to a global number, the global number has the advantage because you have hundreds of other countries that Netflix is available in contributing to that. That's not to downplay. Well, it sort of is, but that's not to say that this wasn't a huge audience. I'm sure this was a huge audience, and clearly, SmackDown and Rampage were impacted, despite not going directly against the main event. We're still going against a boxing card that I'm sure millions and millions of people were tuning into, probably in the tens of millions in the United States.
Well, the latest figure that Netflix put out is that the peak of viewers, again, globally, and this comes from Netflix during the main event, was just over $108 million.
How did they calculate that? Did they have Nielsen monitors in
They called up all 108 million people to confirm that they did, in fact, how many people per household were watching at that time. I want to know how many of these were unique individuals, given the fact that I guarantee I was probably at least responsible for three of these streams that I had. Attempting to go between all my different devices.
And this is where, you know, it'd be nice to have some transparency in how they're calculating this. Because on one hand, I mean, are they counting multiple different streams happening from generating from a single account? And then there is the advantage that they would have in trying to come up with a big number, in that lots of people are sharing a single account. Many households are sharing a single account. Maybe most accounts at this point are being shared across households. So I don't know. There's a lot of complexity in this. And I wish that Nielsen, you know, why don't we have a unified measurement for all television viewing, you know, despite the fact that now we have a lot of television viewing happening on streaming as well as traditional formats. It's, you know, I don't know the answer. We'll have to bug Brian Fuhrer or something to come on to the program to explain to us why, from Nielsen, why there's such fragmentation and such a non-coverage of streaming telecasts.
Well, I would think in, you know, a lot of these numbers, like the fact is, I think Netflix has done a tremendous job of the aftermath of this card of touting the success. And I don't think anyone is going to dispute that on Friday night, this felt like one of those like massive, like sporting cultural events that just dominated everyone's discussion, everyone's conversation. Like Netflix owned the night with this fight. And in the aftermath, I would say if you're advertisers, it certainly you see these numbers and you're salivating, but I think you also want to know that, you know, to have the confidence that that you know, you're like, certainly Netflix is going to be commanding huge premiums if they say we can reach this amount of people with the right event. There's going to be a need, I think, for a third party to kind of audit these numbers, because these advertisers are going to want to know exactly what they are spending for. But I would say in the night of and the following day, it was just nonstop complaints about the stream.
I had no issues here. I don't know what you're complaining about. I had no issues here in the Northeast.
I don't think I was one of one on Friday night. I think that's a very safe assumption to make. But I mean, now fast forward to Wednesday, and like it kind of feels as though like, yeah, that was this hiccup that they have just worked their way past. And certainly that will be an issue if that affects the NFL games on Christmas Day. I think they have to get that right on Christmas Day. But I don't know if these football games are going to necessarily have the global reach that this fight did. Like, certainly in the U.S., this is going to do massive amounts of viewership on Christmas Day. But like, this was something that just permeated so many different territories that had an interest in seeing this fight and being so accessible as it was on Netflix.
Yeah, the stock price has responded not negatively. It's not like it's a negative on the stock price. The fact that so many people had tech issues and had trouble maintaining the stream, the stock price has been up in the days, you know, since Friday when the market's been open. So it's doing fine. And you know, as everyone says, you know, there's not going to be tens of millions. There's not going to be 60 million people watching Raw on January 6th, is it? So maybe it'll be okay, but I know this is not the first time that Netflix has had issues with a live stream, despite the fact that Netflix is by far the streaming service that has won the streaming wars, you could say. It is by far, among paid subscription services. Nielsen does cover what platform people are watching, so they are covering and monitoring streaming to some extent, because they give us this chart here, the gauge every month. And in any case, they're basically double or more what every other subscription streaming service is doing. YouTube, plain old YouTube, the channel that we're on, we're number one with 10%, almost 11% of all TV watch time. But then Netflix is next at about 8%, and the next nearest one is Amazon Prime Video with 3.6%, and everybody else is 2% or less.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you two editions of Rewind Away, starting off with a film review of Death Warrior. As described, the 2009 classic features five of the best mixed martial arts champions from around the world forced to play a deadly game. Plus, we tackle TNA's Turning Point from 2009. Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord will be covering the historic Crossover 2 event, plus an Ask Away mailbag show, Rewind to SmackDown, and Collision Course. $6 a month gets you access to the Post Wrestling Cafe.
Do you come out of this event? I mean, what does it tell you about Netflix's direction toward? Obviously, there's going to be only like more big live event programming. Do you think this opens up their window of more live sports? Do you feel they will kind of have this selective strategy when it comes to the right event, something like a unique fight like a Mike Tyson, Jake Paul? Or do you think that there is going to be an even bigger appetite for all types of sports and making this more of a regular occurrence on a monthly basis?
I don't know. It just all depends on what consolidation is like, which is another issue we could briefly touch on, is that almost all of the NBCU cable networks are going to be separated and taken out of the Comcast / NBCU company and spun off as their own company, because those are the, including the USA Network, those are the assets that, you know, that are probably the most distressed and the most sure to decline over time, to make their Comcast NBCU. And now we will just have the news and the sports and Bravo. You got to keep Bravo, because I guess that feeds Peacock with a lot of content, with real Desperate Housewives and Real Housewives and stuff like that.
Yeah, but you will have USA and Peacock in like separate entities.
What does it mean for WWE?
Well this is the real brand split that is not going to get anywhere near the amount of attention. But yeah, this is, you know, Comcast made the announcement this week that it's spinning off most of its cable networks. As Brandon said, USA, but this will include CNBC, MSNBC, Oxygen, all you Oxygen viewers out there, E, Sci-Fi, the Golf Channel, and then Comcast will retain all their big properties, as he mentioned, with the NBC News, Sports, Peacock, and Bravo. So, yeah, you will have USA Network in sort of this, I don't know, you're kind of separating it into the more, let's call them distressed assets, as the vernacular tends to label such companies.
Does that make Peacock any less interested in keeping the WWE rights that they have? I don't have a clear answer to that, but it's just a question to raise, because that synergy of having what's just now SmackDown on USA Network and helping promote your Peacock product, does that make having the W content on Peacock any less valuable, and vice versa? I mean, I guess they're in a contract to keep SmackDown now for 5 years, but it just raises the question that I don't have a clear answer to.
Well, I think that next round of rights as it regards WWE, I mean, it will give you a sense for Peacock. Like, I think we all look at, you know, with all the various streamers that are out there, I think most people believe at the end of the day, there will be several core streamers that are going to be the heavyweights: Netflix, Amazon, Disney Plus. I'd put ESPN Plus likely into that bag, unless they just funnel that into the over the top service. But then you have a Peacock that, I mean, it could go either way. Like, it's certainly got, you know, Comcast behind it. It's got the Olympics, which were a big hit this past summer. But 5 years from now, like, is Peacock going to be in that kind of upper echelon of the big heavyweights that you are competing with the Netflixes and Amazons of the world for the biggest rights? And, you know, and WWE, it's not necessarily the make or break, but it's pretty core programming that Peacock has attached to its brand that is monthly recurring programming.
And something else to watch is you always got David Zaslav talking about consolidation, and he just wants the U.S. president who's going to be the most open to allowing consolidation to happen. He's got the more likely candidate that got elected. So it's possible maybe that WBD is involved in some sort of consolidation with those cable assets that are separating from Comcast.
Did you have any observations? Just and what did hook you to tune in on Friday night. I didn't know if you would check this out or not.
I watched it. You want to break it down round by round? It was a pretty slow fight. I don't know. Why did I watch it? Something happened. Well, I don't know. Somebody told me that they thought that the SmackDown rating was going to get crushed because of this. So I decided to watch it, I guess, among other reasons.
And it did get hurt. Like, this was its lowest number since moving to USA. And, like, SmackDown was done before even the Amanda Serrano-Katie Taylor fight. So this was, you're talking several fights into the undercard that, like, it's not as though there was any other explanation on television that would have affected SmackDown beyond this. Like, it does tell you there was an interest in the entire production from Netflix presenting a boxing card that grabbed people, even with lesser-known fighters on the undercard.
Yeah. The main event was pretty boring. I don't think they did each other any favors there, but I guess maybe the idea is to drag this out into another fight involving Logan Paul. But, you know, Jake Paul didn't look like a very skilled fighter that you'd be really eager to see again. Mike Tyson clearly had no business being in the ring at 58 or whatever he is. So,
are you trying to tell us that at 58 years old, Mike Tyson really showed his ass on this broadcast?
He sure did. He sure did. That was maybe the most intriguing moment was, you know, the moment where Mike Tyson's butt was suddenly seen, and then the camera zoomed in to try to avoid this.
Yeah. Also, the interviewer was his son as well.
Oh, was that who was interviewing him at that time?
That's who was interviewing him off camera. It was his son. It was supposed to be Ariel Helwani doing that interview, and he got called away. So Mike Tyson's son did the interview.
It was, as a production and presentation in general, it was very pro wrestling like, I would say, in terms of, like, it was very much like, you know,
all these trailer pay-per-views that we've seen, like that they,
I haven't seen any of them, but
no, they're hit and miss. Let's put it that way.
It felt like a pop-up wrestling pay-per-view, maybe in some ways, like the Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view would feel, or, you know, a wrestling company that's just popping up to do one pay-per-view suddenly and cash in, and they're trying to hype, and you got the MVP promoter out there, you know, in between, I think it would be the women's fight and the main event, you know, just going on and on about how huge an event this is. And it's so amazing. And you had Mauro Ranallo and Roy Jones Jr. And Rosie Perez, of course.
Poor Rosie Perez, man. She has just caught so much flack coming out of this event. I mean, not the most skilled broadcaster for boxing, but she's a legit boxing fan, and that's what they were going for.
I've confirmed through the internet that she is a big boxing fan. Maybe not much of an analyst at this point, but there's still room for improvement.
Yeah. And, you know, circling it back again to the wrestling front, like, not only was the big focus on the Christmas Day games, but I mean, plenty of mentions of WWE Raw coming to Netflix. Like, this was a lot of people reached to promote this January 6th debut. And, you know, this coincided with Paul Levesque's whirlwind cross country tour this past weekend that took him on Saturday night to Madison Square Garden for UFC 309 with Stephanie McMahon. Yes. And then going across the time zones to Las Vegas for a Travis Scott concert on Sunday and announcing, confirming that the first Raw on Netflix will take place at the Intuit Dome, the tax service in Inglewood, California.
Yes. And there was video of Triple H shaking hands with his mother-in-law's boss. That happened as well.
I didn't see this on any WWE socials. They didn't show this on Raw.
No, they didn't for some reason. I don't know. I don't know why. But yeah, that's what is there to say? I saw he was pictured sitting behind Don Bongino, who's another major social media influencer. I don't think that was on WWE socials either.
Were his seats better than Dana White's at that WrestleMania he went to watch Ronda Rousey?
They looked like it. It looked like he was pretty close to the Octagon.
Okay, well, they took care of him very well. Well, it is worth noting that the Intuit Dome, UFC is running the same venue 12 days after Raw. So TKO will be holding two events there within 12 days with Raw and then UFC 312, I believe it is, on January 18th. So, this is the brand new arena that just opened. That is where the LA Clippers are playing. So, and you'll get Travis Scott and probably plenty of other appearances on this first Raw on January 6th as all their attention will be geared towards this launch. Look at this place.
Yeah. A lot of LED, I think. Am I wrong about that? I think I saw a Clippers game, parts of a Clippers game. There's a lot of LED here.
Well, I think we should chat a little bit about UFC 309. And I know many of you might have missed UFC 309. So here's a brief review of the main event at Madison Square Garden.
And ladies and gentlemen, look who is now making his way to the world famous octagon, flanked by UFC CEO Dana White, 45, soon to be 47, President-elect Donald Trump.
It's always loud when he comes here, but yes. Now that he's won, now that he's the president again, yes. Oh my God.
Making his way to watch the UFC, which he absolutely loves, and doing so with some sort of victory lap after regaining the presidency earlier this month in emphatic fashion with an election blowout of the Democratic candidate, Kamala Harris.
One of the things that I've really tried to do through this whole thing is stay out of politics. When people tune in to watch sports, they don't want to hear that crap. They don't want to hear what your opinions are, who you're voting for, or what you're doing. They want to get away from everything in their life, and they want to focus on whether, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours, however long the sport is. We don't muzzle anybody, but we keep politics out of the sport. You want to listen to that stuff? Turn on any other station. You got it. When you turn into the UFC, you're there to see fights.
A tried and true politician, Dana White. Sorry, I had that old 2021 clip accidentally tacked on at the end there. But yes,
you're just trying to put a leash on Dana White. I know what's happening.
No muzzles, no leashes. Okay, that's not the UFC way. I would be very curious if we had a strong Democratic message represented on the broadcast booth, but they did not on Saturday. This is like part and parcel with the UFC presentation, but it seemed like even the most lax people towards this, like this was just such a step too far. That was just after this arrival, the pretty much token Donald Trump entrance into the arena to American Badass, flanked by his sons, by
he's coming out to the Undertaker's theme, not the gong theme, but
American. Yeah, exactly. You know, there's Kid Rock at his side, RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard. I mean, they're all Elon there. Musk. Elon Musk. And then everyone's attention is taken to the big screen for a victory video of Donald Trump's win. And then we get the in bold 45 and the 5 turns to a 7. I mean, this was just the volume turned up so high that, listen, for whatever you want to say, like the UFC has, like, clearly, like, UFC has leaned into this. Like, this is the sport for this administration and to this audience at Madison Square Garden. Like, they went nuts for this guy. And this is, you know, it was a total commercial for Donald Trump here. But it is what it is. But I mean, the idea of, like, you're separating your politics from sport, it is, we'll remove certain politics that we don't want to be attached to, but the ones that we have a financial or influence in, we will gladly embrace that and let our audience join in on the ride.
What did Vince McMahon say in the Netflix documentary when he was challenged about why he was complaining about Ted Turner competing with them and whether that was the same as him competing with the territories? Sometimes you say certain things in public. The public doesn't understand. Sometimes you say things that you don't necessarily believe, something to that effect.
Dana White would never say anything untruthful or untoward. But yes, what a change that 3 years can make. But this did get a lot of attention. Interestingly enough, the New Yorker did a piece interviewing Dana White, who also stated he's never doing any of this again. Politics is just full of it's dirty. I'm never doing this again. But I mean, again, sometimes you say things in public that we don't know if they are the actual meanings that same individual would have. But this was at the end of the prelim card. And then we transfer on over to the pay-per-view portion where they had a camera on Donald Trump. the commentary was constantly bringing up, oh, these fighters, I mean, the pressure of fighting in front of the president. And then most of them, save for Charles Oliveira, who completely ignored Donald Trump in his victory celebration, everyone else, I mean, just embracing Donald Trump. And listen, I don't care what a fighter's political views are, but it's certainly like this is the platform that they have certainly found an inroads in. And this just this was as much a political rally as that you have ever seen on a UFC broadcast. And we'll see if they, you know, lower the influence on this type of stuff now that the election is over. But it's like the UFC, Joe Rogan, Dana White, they are heavily tied into the day-to-day conversation of the rise of Donald Trump into this second administration. And they are attached right there as an influencer in that sense.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's just a part of the politicization of everything, not literally everything, but more and more things get politicized over time, it seems, in this media environment that we're in. What is it? Is it like the, it's this violent, it's actually fighting, and boxing would be maybe the avenue for this, but boxing is, with the exception of some freak show fights, does not become that big of a deal, you know, in my adult life. And maybe it's just, you know, that MMA has been this really good center point, epicenter for a lot of macho libertarian points of view, I guess. And that's exactly the wave that I think Donald Trump, with a lot of his own particular qualities, is riding.
That was your UFC 309 recap. That maybe we'll do more MMA reviews on this show.
Thank you for the memory, Stipe.
Yes. Yeah. Stipe Miocic. I'm done. I'm done. Thank God. That was the end for him. Also, let's chat a little bit about AEW. This past week, it was Brandon Thurston's latest appearance with Josh Nason, our good friend over at the Wrestling Observer site. You guys went through the Q3 results for All Elite Wrestling, covering July through the end of September. And I thought we could go through some of the highs and maybe a handful, if not more, lows for AEW over this period. I mean, on top of everything, you have, you know, we are still in the wake of the recent renewal of the television deal with WBD. But I think it's always a good chance to look at over a period of time where AEW is. And did this reaffirm for you, Brandon, like actually going through all these numbers, seeing where AEW is at and kind of confirming, like when people say AEW is cold, is that an overstatement or would the numbers back that up?
The numbers back that up. Even in ranking, Dynamite on a medium basis in Q3, it's rankings, which is what we've now been told to focus on. And I think that is, I mean, really, that's what I said to focus on some 8 years ago, or how, in 2016, 2017, I was saying that's the thing that we should really focus on the most, because that's saying, okay, here's all these cable properties. Which ones are the best? Which ones are the ones that I want to pay the most for, controlling for all other factors? Point being, from a year ago at the same time, looking at cable, prime time, Dynamite's ranked, and this is among all programs on a given week, is ranked a little bit lower than it was a year ago. Collision is ranked a little bit lower than it was a year ago. Rampage is ranked a little bit lower than it was a year ago. In terms of the demo, they're all down by double digits from a year ago. In terms of total viewership, they're all down by double digits from a year ago. In terms of attendance, Dynamite and Collision are both down by double digits from where they were a year ago. And pay-per-view is down, well, by double digits from where it was a year ago in terms of estimated tickets distributed via WrestleTix. We've still got another couple pay-per-views to go here in 2024. So I don't know what the breakdown is at the same point without pulling up a spreadsheet. They do have more pay-per-views in this year to help them get to a higher total versus last year.
Yeah, we have Full Gear this weekend, World's End at the end of December, and then you also have the ROH Final Battle show.
They'll have one more pay-per-view in 2024 because they'll have Dynasty this year, which they didn't have in 2023.
Yeah, I would say, like, just kind of going through the events for this quarter, I would, you know, your big standout events, you had two pay-per-views with All In, All Out, and then you had the residency at Esports Stadium, where they did both AEW and ROH programming. You had Grand Slam at Arthur Ashe Stadium. I mean, 8,800 people that I mean, if you're comparing year to year at Arthur Ashe Stadium, like it's a far cry from where they were at the onset running that venue each year. But by the standards of today, 8,800 for a non-pay-per-view, I'm sure they were like that holds up as one of the high points here. But I mean, you really have to just be looking at an overall downturn in popularity for the company. That is something they are battling. You can see with the on-screen product, like there are very clear measures being demonstrated in terms of trying to promote more shows, hammering home pay-per-view dates. I mean, there's definitely an aggression on television, but it's going to take time to see if that is really going to take hold with people. And ultimately, I think you look at it's going to be that formula of finding a star or stars that really just are able to grab an audience and that can lift everything. But they are, you know, they're in a rut as this year comes to an end, and it's hard to come to any other conclusion than that.
And to be clear, these rankings are, at least in Dynamite's case, is still high enough that it's not like WBD bought something that isn't worth what they thought it was worth. Dynamite is still highly ranked on its week, on its night, and it's still worth a lot of money. I don't want to say, I don't want to give it an opposite message. That being said, there's a difference between the financial outlook of this company and the trajectory of their fan popularity. And those two things are going in totally opposite directions, much like WWE was going in opposite directions in 2018. They made a great TV deal while their popularity was descending and continuing to descend after that. That's just the weird counterintuitive wrestling business that we live in now. But what would, if you were to get an honest answer from someone in AEW or from Tony Khan himself about why this is happening, what do you think their truly believed reason is?
If we were to inject Tony Khan with truth serum and we got an honest answer,
assuming it's not illegal for him to answer that, yes.
Yes, like their overseas television deals when it comes to airing things live or taped, which could be illegal.
My question is the problem, what's the problem, A? And B, do they even identify a problem, the right problem?
No, I don't think you... I think from the outside looking in, I don't even pin it on like one particular thing. I think anyone can go back and if you want to look at the impetus of this problem... I think it really takes form with that press conference with CM Punk. I think that was the first time that this product, you saw just this major star airing out all of his grievances with this company and adding this negative taint to this brand that had been kind of cultivated as sort of a fan first product that was satisfying an audience that people were happy to be there. This is a more pleasant environment than the competitors. And yes, we had heard all of the problems that were in the lead up to this, but this was the powder keg. This was undeniable to dismiss as hearsay rumors. Here was your biggest star next to the head of this company, just unloading on the building blocks of this company and the DNA itself of this company. And this is where it begins. And you can Monday morning quarterback all the ways this was mishandled, the attempt to try and keep CM Punk happy, to bring him back, to build a show around him. But this was, to me, when the toxicity began. And that further was exacerbated with the exit of CM Punk, I think leaving a real negative image of the company that was left in kind of this, well, that was the end of one chapter of this company. What is the next chapter? And this coincides with WWE heating itself up, and you're battling this negative image along with a super positive image now of WWE
Vince McMahon.
It's no longer in vogue to be dismissing WWE or it's the uncool product. Now that's flipped, and you're in the unenviable task of trying to convince your fans we are the cool product, we are cutting edge, and it's, you're watching a product that it doesn't scream cutting edge to you. You don't you have some great performers, you have some great content, but it's an overall vibe that is very hard to put your thumb on as just one particular thing when it's overall, it's image repair that you are most in need of. And I think that there is a sort of overall feeling when you watch this show that it's trying to appeal to so many different bases and to try and be everything instead of what is our mission statement. What are we? What are we not? What are we not going to do? And I don't think there's anything off the table that they are going to do. Yes, this is the company that can give you your big Will Ospreay performance on pay-per-view every month. We're also the company that will bring in MXM Collection because there's an avenue for that. There's an avenue for this. We're trying to do so many things. And it's just not clicking. And it's very hard to just turn that momentum around when it's up against you.
Yeah, I want to say again, AEW is good for three, maybe 4 years, because that's the term of their TV deal, which starts in January. But I think, you know, I feel very much that the way that people talk about AEW now is the way that people talked about WWE throughout the 2010s, saying, well, if they just, well, what about if they, if, I hope they're going to do, like, it doesn't really, that's assuming that this is a company that is built for fans first. And I think, yeah, Tony cares a lot about the fans. He really wants to please them, but who he wants to please more are the talent and the staff who he works with. And that avoids AEW having a clear vision that's going to build stars and build an audience and reverse this trajectory just to even get back to the level of popularity that they were at a year ago or 2 years ago.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
If you look at the way business is now, is this sustainable? Like, this level of AEW did get this renewal, and this did give them 3 years. Certainly, you can look at these numbers as like, is this rock bottom? Is there a lower amount to hit? Or is there the belief that,
if listen, it flattens out, yeah. But if it can, I mean, it's not stopping. The decline is not stopping. As you can see, if people watching the video can see in this chart here, it's double digits. It was down in 2022. It was double digits down in 2023. It's double digits down now in 2024. This, if it plateaus and levels off at some point, and if that point is as a point at which Dynamite is still ranking highly enough to get a good TV deal, then yes, they'll be fine. But of course, at a certain point, Dynamite continues to fall and loses a lot of value.
There's just the, like, whenever you're looking at these popularity metrics, it's what you can convert these metrics into real dollars with. And at this level, they've been able to secure this deal. And I'm sure there's plenty of people that, if you are Tony Khan, who are you leaning on for constructive criticism versus don't listen to all this negativity out there? You're doing great. This is, you have built this company into a totally viable alternative that has secured a 9-figure deal for minimum 3 years to go. And this is not as doom and gloom as it is,
which is
made out to be,
and was unthinkable in 2017.
And this becomes very difficult, I think, to balance real criticism from bad faith criticism at the time. It's not to dismiss where AEW is. This is a very viable product. And it does have the cushion of getting this television deal into its rear view and gets that kind of, it now gets a reprieve to focus on where you want to be. Obviously, you want numbers to be higher than this. The question is identifying that product and having the people around you that are going to help you identify that product and be able to come up with, you know, a coherent strategy at a time when the industry is so geared towards producing more content. And there's the natural question of just the overflow of just workload for a Tony Khan to focus on this. And that becomes a bigger question that we have seen so many people in these positions reach that burnout factor. It's not like Tony Khan can step aside like a Jerry Lawler in Memphis and have Jerry Jarrett take over for 6 months. Like, you don't have that person that is there in that position to oversee when Tony Khan has invested himself into all facets of the industry.
Like, why couldn't he? I mean, why couldn't he just say, you know, I'm going to let somebody else run TV for the foreseeable future?
I don't know if that person is there.
Is the problem.
I think that's it. Like, there's nothing that would stop him from doing such a thing. I just do not think, like, that person has been identified and put into that position that could oversee so many things, even
but
if Tony
again,
Khan,
like, I mean, like, nobody knew who Tony Khan was in 2018, but yet he came in and he read Observers for, you know, a lot of his life. And he was a huge wrestling fan and loved wrestling, and he was able to do it, which tells me, I do think that he has and has a special knowledge about wrestling that enabled him to do that. But it tells me that there's a lot of people that could do this job and do it well. And a lot of people who have been able to do the job, been given the opportunity and have been given the job, didn't have the knowledge to connect with this kind of audience.
Rob Bihari is given Rampage on Friday nights.
There you go. Assistant Booker Cubs
him and
fan.
The Cubs fan. Just give them Rampage. Give those two Rampage.
Yeah, it'll be Lucha Night.
All right. Just following on that note from AEW, they also announced on Tuesday their first events, well, events throughout December as well as into 2025. And this, it will include the Winter is Coming special and three nights at the Hammerstein Ballroom. This had first been reported by Andrew Zarian and Sean Ross Sapp that Ring of Honor would be going to the Hammerstein Ballroom. That will be Friday, December 20th, followed by a Collision taping on December 21st, and then a special Dynamite taping on Sunday, December 22nd, presumably to air on Christmas Day later that week.
Yes, I checked out the capacities. Some of these are buildings that they have run before. Obviously, the pay-per-view at Crypto Arena, Crypto.com Arena, is what the formal Staples Center, right? So this is a yes. huge arena. But some of these do seem to be... I didn't get like a super clear, oh my God, they're running all small auditoriums. But these do seem to be some smaller capacity buildings here. The other thing that I would look at, too, is there's a number of double tapings. You get the sense that these are more double tapings of both Collision and Dynamite on the same night in the same building than before. I know Fightful has been reporting a little bit about how the talent really prefers the Wednesday, Thursday. There's obvious reasons why that's just more convenient for travel. Maybe that's, I don't know if you're running two different buildings, it might not be more convenient for production, but there might
be. You also are looking at the very strong likelihood there's no Rampage to worry about taping on a Wednesday night either. So it's not as though
there could be another show. Maybe Shockwave is another show that ends up on a different network, but no rumors of that, no rumblings of that whatsoever lately.
I'm sure he'll confirm that tomorrow.
Yes, I'm sure.
But yes, I guess the major stuff to look at is February 15th, which is fast approaching, is the Grand Slam event in Australia, and then the Revolution pay-per-view, which is only 3 weeks later on March the 9th. In LA at the crypto.com arena.
Yes.
All right. That's your latest AEW news. We also have, what else do we have to go through here? The Hall of Fame. I think this was the year that the largest percentage of people I voted for ended up going in. Did a lot of your candidates get inducted this particular year?
I voted for June Byers, Roman Reigns. I voted for the Young Bucks who got in. June Byers did not get in. I voted for all my non-wrestlers did not get in, right? Because Bobby Davis is the only non-wrestler who got in. Who else did I vote for? Jim Johnson, Ridge Parks.
And Grand Wizard.
Grand Wizard did not get in. Only two of mine got in. How many of yours got in?
I voted for Roman Reigns, Shingo Takagi, Johnny Rougeau, the Young Bucks, Shima, who had an insane jump this year, and Bobby Davis. So I had this had to have been the highest amount of people I voted for that all got in. Shima, I voted for Shima every year, and I cannot explain this incredible jump other than I think like the Japanese category. I think it's a lot thinner than many of the others, and I think for many, if they were voting for Shingo Takagi, I think you lean more, you do at least focus on his Dragon Gate contributions, and perhaps that just gave enough people the impetus to vote for Shima. But still, like that amount of a jump from 23% to above 60 is an extraordinary increase, and it's not as though Shima did anything appreciable in the last year that warrants such a jump. So that was the one genuine surprise was Shima.
Yeah. 23% last year to 60%. And you need 60% of the vote to go in. We were on the right side of history as it concerns Roman Reigns. I I pity those who, from decades from now, we will look back on and say the partisan voters who just could not help themselves but try to deny and fail to deny Roman Reigns from being a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, for some, it was a very tough election month of who was voted in. But Roman Reigns leading all vote getters, 307 votes, 66.7%. I mean, he was within shooting distance last year, but cleared the hurdle. And that's sort of the trend we're seeing, is that, you know, if you're in that 50% range or so, odds are better than not that you are going to cross the threshold. Young Bucks were in a similar boat last year. They got over the hump this year, although not a slam dunk that they got in. This was their, second year on the ballot, I believe. And they got in. CM Punk is sort of in that category now, where he failed to get in. I think I did the math. I think he needs something like 36 votes or something to get in.
What was his percentage? Do you remember?
I could pull it up here, okay. But it was, I think it was like the low 50s. So, I mean, he's close enough that I think he will get here. But, I mean, rewind to our last conversation, and I think that is now become like the very clearest reason is the legacy of AEW.
Really weigh that as, yeah.
Yeah. And I do understand that thinking. Like, we just had a whole discussion about what has, you know, what was a tipping point for AEW, and are all of AEW's problems at the feet of CM Punk? I won't go that far, but does CM Punk have a responsibility in this company's brand and image being harmed? Absolutely. I don't think that's a debate.
Yeah, I think that's true, as well as he's been one of the biggest stars in wrestling when he's been around. Particularly since he's been around since 2021, but before that too. And I think he's been, you know, just so far and above, you know, so definitively in a group of some of the biggest stars in wrestling. And I think he'll continue to strengthen that case, provided he stays healthy enough for at least a few years to come here in WWE.
Yeah, I mean, if he stays healthy, odds are he will have a pretty big year in WWE. Could have a Mania main event. Odds are, I would say, pretty strong that he's going to get in. And even from detractors of his, I think people acknowledge that, it's not like an absolute no that they will never vote for him. But that, like, it is, I think the closest comparison that many have brought up is to Shawn Michaels of a generation ago, where there was a very negative connotation to Shawn Michaels in between his first and second runs with the company.
We're waiting for CM Punk to find religion is what he needs to get in.
Oh, could you imagine that? I mean, that could be the ultimate final act. Christian martyr Punk. Oh, gosh. Okay, well, enough about the cult of personality. There you go. That is the Hall of Fame results for 2024. Any big takeaways of ratings notes from this past week? We had a taped edition of Raw, which still performed relatively well. There was a decrease going against the Dallas Cowboys-Houston Texans game, but ranked ahead of everything on cable except for Monday Night Football with 1,516,000 viewers and a 0.49 in the demo. And we are inching closer and closer towards the end of the year. And I'm stating it right now. I will miss these 2 hours of Raw with commercial interruption that I feel will be a thing of the past come January.
Yeah. These were normal ratings, I think, for Raw. Rampage got crushed, as well as did Rampage has second lowest rating ever. SmackDown, as we mentioned earlier, had its lowest rating yet since it's moved to the USA Network. This was a pretty pedestrian, normal Raw going against Monday Night Football rating. The last week was up from the prior week, as you can see here in the demo. They're putting up numbers that are similar to what they were doing in the prior year, despite what you can say about cord cutting. These are pretty normal ratings. Not much to analyze on the week by week here, I think.
Well, then those are your ratings notes for the week, and we'll wrap things up. Tony Khan is doing a media call on Thursday. No shortage of I think topics to ask him about. I mean, I guess he did one of these right after the TV deal was announced. I think the TV deal was announced before WrestleDream, unless I have my dates mixed up. But regardless, always interesting topics to ask Tony, and we will see what comes out of that. And this is, of course, going into full gear this coming Saturday, which will eliminate Collision for this one particular night. And then Collision comes back next week with a 3-hour block at 4 PM, the day of Survivor Series. So, man, your day is sorted.
Rampage pre-upted?
Yes, yes. You'll okay. get Rampage followed by 2 hours of Collision on November 30th. And a 6 p.m. start time for Survivor Series. So there will be some crossover there. But, I mean, could you envision a better Saturday than starting at 4 p.m. and it takes you right through the end of War Games?
Yeah, that sounds like a good time to watch a lot of wrestling. I bet you could, you know, come up with games with your friends to predict who the winners are. And it would, you know, it'd probably be pretty easy to predict who the winners are, but you could do that game.
All right. We're going to wrap things up, but thank you to everyone for tuning in as we have gone through a lot of topics here. Brandon will be back on Sunday with WrestleNomics Radio. Where can people send in their questions, Brandon, for you to give them the goods on what their questions are eliciting an answer of?
To mailbag@WrestleNomics.com for questions on the Sunday program. This will be I will do a Sunday program. I think I might not do. I don't know. This is like the first time I'm thinking about it again, since now that I'm talking about it live to hundreds of people. There'll be a program this Sunday. Mailbag@WrestleNomics.com, which is you can listen to only if you are a member, a subscriber of Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Subscribers also got access to all the quarter hour reports that are up now that I posted today of SmackDown, Rampage, Collision, and Raw. Those are now up for subscribers as they are every week. So you can go to patreon.com/WrestleNomics.
And I will be back later tonight, right after Dynamite, with Wei Ting. So you can listen to that here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. And then on Thursday, postwrestlingcafe.com, we are doing our final mailbag show of the year. So you can send in your questions for that at forum.postwrestling.com. Submit all of your questions. We will answer those. We're big on mailbags at WrestleNomics and Post Wrestling. So check out all of that. I also did a show on Tuesday with a more lengthier discussion on the whole Observer Hall of Fame class. So that is also there for Post Wrestling Cafe members. So that's going to wrap things up. We are back next Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And that is it for us as we say goodbye.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.